We have been dealing with some of the issues in relation to the sixth commandment. And as you can imagine, there are so many relevant issues we have to think about, and quite often those issues are not clearly mentioned in the scriptures. And so many of these issues have to be explained based on current trends or events. And so as a result, I must apologize to you that tonight what we are going to study is not necessarily any sort of exposition of any given passage of the scriptures. But instead, I think we need to understand the issue first. And my second part of the message in relation to euthanasia, I may talk about the sanctity of life more deeply. So today, more or like, we are going to see what it means by this issue. What are the implications? And I will not be able to fully expound every implication and ramification we may find from this particular issue. Let me begin with a couple of stories here. Because quite often euthanasia issue is brought into our discussions or our attention is given to this particular issue because of heartbreaking and heart-moving stories. And these stories are virtually everywhere. I think even this past week we found a couple of newspaper articles concerning this particular issue from Guardian's newspaper, in fact. Here is a story. After a 78-year-old man was submitted to hospital, an examination revealed an erratic heartbeat, an enlarged prostate, a bowel obstruction, and arthritic joints. When the patient learned that surgery was being planned, he pleaded, "Listen, doctor, I don't want to die with tubes sticking out all over me. I don't want my children to remember their father that way. I am old and tired and having enough of life, believe me. But still I want to be a man, not a vegetable, that someone comes and waters every day. You see, the engine is broken down. It is time for the engineer to abandon it." Despite this eloquent request, a tube for feeding was placed down the old man's nose into his stomach. Intravenous injections were made four times a day. Later, the man was hooked up to a respirator to increase his oxygen intake. One night, he reached over and switched off his respirator. For several hours, the hospital staff did not realize what had happened. On the bedside table, they found this suicide note: "Death is not the enemy, doctor. Inhumanity is." Another case concerns an 80-year-old blind widow who had lived for years in a nursing home. Having endured uninterrupted pain from her cancer, she saved up morphine tablets to swallow all at once in the hope of dying. She sank into a coma, but an attendant discovered the suicide attempt. The woman's consciousness revived after she was rushed to a hospital emergency room and injected with an antimorphine drug. She was later returned to the nursing home, where she had to suffer much longer. Had she the right to take the deadly dosage of the drug and to die undisturbed after doing so? These are only just two of many, many stories we can hear about and we can find from just regular, ordinary, daily newspapers to justify euthanasia. By the way, when I'm talking about euthanasia issue, it is inevitable for me to talk about assisted suicide because it is quite closely related to the euthanasia issue. So even though eventually I'm going to deal with an issue of suicide, assisted suicide will be combined with the euthanasia issue when I'm going to deal with this particular matter. And by the way, each story is really heart-wrenching and heart-breaking. And as we are getting older, I think oftentimes we are thinking about how to end our lives. That is real. That is not just a theory, and it becomes a real issue to each and every one of us as we are getting more mature. Nowadays, there are many debates over a public policy on the issue of euthanasia and assisted suicide, and I think during this past week, one gentleman had some sort of stroke or some problems, and as a result, he became completely paralyzed, and he cannot move anything, and he wants to die, and he wants to have the euthanasia right in England, but England, the law does not permit him to kill himself in that way, etc. So there are a lot of issues related to this particular subject. This issue is so important that the outcome of the debates may affect family relationships, relationships between doctors and patients, and ideas of medical ethics. You know, there are sometimes some children who do not want to look after their elderly parents and so on. So as a result, they want to take the suicide in order to reduce their burdens to take care of their elderly parents. Or doctors and patients, basically doctors' job is to revive the people, to restore the sick one's health and so on. But in euthanasia case, doctors are to help the patients to die. And ideas of medical ethics. What should be the center of medical ethics? It is to give life to the people or to take the life away from people. So medical ethics issue is involved here. In order to know of the validity of this discussion today, first we need to know whether it is necessary for us to talk about it. I do believe that there are two basic reasons compelling us to look into this particular subject. One, euthanasia and assisted suicide involve any loss of human life, which is directly related to the sixth commandment. Life and death. Life or death. Those issues are involved here. Two, the controversy over euthanasia and assisted suicide is happening in many parts of the world. It is not a theory anymore, but it is being practiced in some parts of the world. And many parts of the world, in fact, it becomes a very hot controversy for debates. The states of Oregon and Washington in USA, the Netherlands, Belgium, and Switzerland are the only a few examples in the world where laws specifically permit euthanasia or assisted suicide. Oregon's Death with Dignity Act passed in November 1994 and went into effect in 1997. The Netherlands and Belgium, year 2002, permit both euthanasia and assisted suicide. In the Netherlands, a bill for the review of cases of termination of life on request and assistance with suicide was approved in April year 2001. Switzerland allowed both physician and non-physician assisted suicide since 1941. The country of Luxembourg legalized assisted suicide and euthanasia in February of year 2008. Also, in 1997, Colombia's Supreme Court ruled that penalties for mercy killing should be removed. So here is another term, mercy killing. In 1995, Australia's Northern Territory approved an euthanasia bill, which was Rights of the Terminally Ill Act. And it went into effect in 1996, but it was overturned by the Australian Parliament in 1997. How about England and Wales? In England and Wales, there is a possibility of up to 14 years imprisonment for anybody assisting a suicide. It's very interesting, by the way, logically a very challenging issue. It is because suicide itself in England and Wales is not a crime. It is because it used to be a crime to kill yourself. However, it was decriminalized in this country in 1961. So committing a suicide is not a crime, but it is a crime to assist in a non-crime. In other words, if you assist someone to kill himself, so suicide itself is not a crime, but if you assist that non-criminal act of suicide, it becomes a crime. I'm just talking about it from legal point of view, okay? I'm not saying that committing suicide is not a crime or something like that. Thus, it is a very, very challenging situation. And so that is the point quite often the proponents of euthanasia are trying to push. Suicide is not a crime. And so here are some people who are trying to help someone who is trying to commit non-criminal act. And why does it have to be a crime, an offense against any sort of law? Many countries do not have any specific legal code on the issue of euthanasia and assisted suicide. Or some countries do penalize the people who are involved in assisted suicide, but the penalty is only a very light sentence. So the law does not recognize certain things as not a guilty act, non-criminal act. However, even though it is being committed, the penalty is so light, almost negligent level, and it does not have a significant impact upon the minds of the people. The issue of euthanasia has been evolved by various ramifications. For example, it is not illegal to attempt suicide in Scotland, but helping someone take their own life could lead to prosecution. Margot MacDonald, a member of Scottish Parliament who has Parkinson's disease, brought the bill to make it legal for someone to seek help to end their life. Apart from legal codes in this country, I'm not really sure whether the Director of Public Prosecution in England has any intention to take any sort of legal action against those who assist the suicide of friends or relatives. This issue of euthanasia and assisted suicide are very relevant to both you and me, in fact, while we live in this part of the world. And in fact, this issue is not very far away from us. And some years ago, one of my friend's mother passed away. But at the end of her life, the pain was extreme and so on, so large dosage of morphine was given to her. It was to relieve her pain, but at the same time there was a side effect. So in fact, the cause of her death is her illness. However, the large dosage of that morphine very possibly contributed to shorten her life. Maybe I do not know how long and how much time. However, once after that practice was done, my friend is a very good Christian, and he called me and he said, I feel really bad, as if I killed my mother. So it may happen to us, and it may happen to our loved ones, and how should we respond to such cases? This issue has not gone away completely, even though at the moment it is, euthanasia is illegal and assisted suicide is illegal in this country, but it is only waiting for resurgence. Some Christians have become blindly adopting bandwagons such as the quality of life or even the right to die. And I checked a South Australian website for Life SA for one particular report, and it says this. Only recently did the official picture come to hand, supplied by Dutch government sources. We now know that the intentional death is brought by Dutch doctors in about one-fifth of the deaths in the country. In over two-thirds of the cases, the death certificate is falsified after euthanasia to make it seem that the death was due to natural causes. The doctor suffers no penalty for this, and it is not known whether or not any guidelines were followed at all. Where information is available about guidelines, they are known to be widely disregarded. Just over one-quarter of the doctors admitted they had killed patients without any requests at all. It is a simple example that euthanasia even cannot be controlled, even though it will be legalized. There will be severe cases of abuses. So here are some of the issues. First of all, arguments raised by the advocates of voluntary euthanasia. First of all, there are circumstantial arguments. The proponents of euthanasia argue that man must have a right to die with dignity, especially when he's suffering from a terminal illness, or unlikely to benefit from the discovery of a cure for that illness during what remains of her life expectancy. Number three, as a direct result of the illness, either suffering intolerable pain or only has available a life that is unacceptably burdensome, because the illness has to be treated in ways which lead to her being unacceptably dependent on others or on technological means of life support. Or has an enduring and voluntary and competent wish to die. Or unable without assistance to commit suicide. And in those cases, the proponents of or advocates of euthanasia say that we should allow those people to kill themselves or to be allowed to be killed by their assistants and so on. However, these five arguments or cases do have at least two problems. First of all, they are saying that if someone is terminally ill, then he should be allowed to have the right to die, euthanasia. And so, the first problem is the definition of terminally ill. What do you mean by terminally ill? Number two, the changes that have already taken place to extend euthanasia or assisted suicide to those who aren't terminally ill. As we are going to discuss this issue, I cannot but relate it to the issue of abortion, because abortion issue has directly influenced on the debates over euthanasia or assisted suicide. It is quite interesting to see the big contrast between abortion issue and euthanasia issue. Isn't it interesting to know and hear from different people that unborn babies can be killed, can be removed because they are not persons. Because they are not persons, their lives should not be respected. We should never recognize their personhood. Because they are not persons, we can remove them. However, in euthanasia issue, people are saying that because they are people, they are persons, they should have right to kill themselves. Second, there is also a consequential argument. Surprisingly, this argument relates itself to other issues including abortion. Because we have studied about abortion already, it may be helpful to relate the argument for euthanasia to the abortion issues. The proponents of euthanasia use the same tactic and same logic to argue that the proponents of abortion have used. They argue for the right to privacy. They argue for the right to privacy. The right of privacy was allowed to those involving abortion. This is my body. So whatever I have inside of me, it is my right to terminate it. So right to privacy. The euthanasia people argue that the terminally ill patients should be given the same right to end the suffering and die with dignity. They claim that a person must have absolute autonomy over himself, and no one should have any things over the individual's lives. It is quite interesting to notice that, as I mentioned before, while the abortionists argue that the unborn babies do not have any legal protection because they are not persons, the euthanasia advocates argue that because the terminally ill people are persons, they must be given the right to kill themselves in dignity. And so, we cannot but think about a particular word definition, a terminal. What does it mean by terminal? How are you going to define the word terminal? If you are terminally ill, then you should be given the right to kill yourself. For example, Jack Kevorkian, who has been known as the death doctor, who practiced in the deaths of more than 130 people. He died, I think, some time ago. I'm not sure this year or last year, but he died only recently. And he participated in the deaths of more than 130 people before he was convicted of murder. This man said that terminal illness was, in quote, any disease that curtails life even for a day, end of quote. If that is the definition of terminally ill, basically every sickness may be a cause of legitimate euthanasia. Terminally illness means terminal illness means any disease that curtails life even for a day. Kevorkian's attorney, Jeffrey Figer, said, in quote, any disease that curtails lifespan is terminal. Dutch psychiatrist Dr. Bodjin Chabot, who provided a fatal dose of drugs to a depressed but a physically healthy woman, stated that, in quote, persistently suicidal patients are indeed terminal, end of quote. Discussion now concerns on whether assisted suicide should be available to elderly people who are healthy but tired of life. The former Dutch Minister of Justice, Els Borsted, said, in quote, I am not against it. So if someone says, I'm old enough, I have seen a lot of things, enough is enough, I'm tired of life, and I want to die. So euthanasia, boom. Well, in such a case, former Minister of Justice in the Netherlands has said, I am not against it if it can be carefully controlled so that only those people of advanced age who are tired of life can use it, end of quote. So as you can see, there are a lot of deviations of the definition of terminal illness. Assisted suicide for non-terminally ill patients has also been advocated repeatedly in the United States. In 1994, the influential New England Journal of Medicine published an article recommending legalization that would permit assisted suicide not only for individuals who have terminal conditions, but also for those with incurable debilitating illnesses. So not necessarily they are terminally ill, but their conditions may be deteriorated and they will be able to live for a while. But in such a case, we should allow those individuals to kill themselves. In May 1996 speech to the prestigious American Psychiatric Association, George DeLury, who portrays himself as a loving husband who helped his non-terminally ill wife die, suggested that, in quote, hopelessly ill people or people past age 60 just apply for a license to die, end of quote. He said that such a license should be granted without examination by doctors. At a 1998 international meeting held in Zurich, Switzerland, Right to Die activists issued a declaration calling for the availability of assisted suicide and euthanasia for those suffering, in quote, severe and enduring distress. By now, you must have noticed that the reason for euthanasia is not terminally ill anymore, even though we may say that, you know, we may be very sympathetic with those people who are terminally ill, and we do not know how to define terminally ill. But if we follow all these definitions proposed and suggested by all so-called those professionals, virtually, we may be able to kill ourselves virtually for everything. A new proposer in South Australia, some time ago, the law was proposed, if approved, would make euthanasia and assisted suicide available to those who are, in quote, hopelessly ill. And you do not know what that means. Again, how to define hopelessly ill depends on individual's choices. In other words, it becomes very subjective once after it becomes a law. If someone says, I am hopelessly ill, how can you refute such a person's argument? that he is not hopelessly ill, because hopelessly ill condition for individuals all depends on individuals' definition, very subjective definition of hopelessly ill condition. According to the Dignity in Dying Bill, year 2001, here is a saying, in quote, a person is hopelessly ill if the person has an injury or illness, A, that will result or has resulted in serious mental impairment or permanent deprivation or consciousness, or B, that seriously and irreversibly impairs the person's quality of life, so that life has become intolerable to that person. What do you mean by saying that your life quality has been irreversibly impaired, and how are you going to define it? So it all becomes very subjective. Then secondly, let me go into euthanasia and assisted suicide issue. First, I think we'd better begin with defining some terms. The term euthanasia comes via New Latin from the Greek word eu, which means easy, happy, or good, and thanatos, which means death. So translated literally, euthanasia means good death. Originally, this referred to a person's spiritual state at death, not physical. Today, euthanasia refers to what is called mercy killing. Depending on personal or professional experience and or a personal knowledge of the subject, euthanasia can become a complex terminological subject. In the language of the day, administering a lethal injection becomes aid in dying, which generally and traditionally has been known as mercy killing. The deliberate ending of a person's life to reduce their suffering. More commonly used expression for this is the right to die. These are just the noble sounding words that literally mean that someone can request to a doctor to kill him. In the terminology battle, the proponents of euthanasia are seeking to redefine what is now known as a form of homicide and call it acceptable medical practice. In fact, someone is helping somebody to die by direct intervention, maybe lethal injection and so on. In the normal condition, in the ordinary sense, in fact, if someone does that is a homicide. But here, euthanasia proponents, advocates, are trying to legalize that practice, and they call this practice as a mercy killing, or individual's right to die. At this point, I need to borrow some words from Dr. Robert Orr, for his definitions for various terms. Homicide, first of all. Homicide is the killing of one human being by another. That's the definition of homicide. Homicide may be classified into two categories. One is the case seemingly justifiable through such as self-defense or capital punishment or war. So that is one category. And the other is murder, which may be applied to both premeditated murder and manslaughter, which does not involve any premeditation or malice. It is a rare question whether euthanasia or assisted suicide is a homicide belong to a premeditated murder. In most countries, it belongs to the area of homicide. Assisted suicide is when one individual helps another take his or her own life because the latter lacks the knowledge, courage, or physical capacity to achieve the desired end. So one person is assisting another person to kill himself or herself. Especially nowadays, people are often talking about physician-assisted suicide. This term means that a physician has provided informations, prescriptions, or a suicide machine, knowing that the patient's intention is suicide. So the patient wants to kill himself, and physicians are providing all the necessary things for him to kill himself. So that is a physician assisted suicide. There are ways to distinguish between euthanasia and assisted suicide. We need to look at the last act, the act without which death would not occur. So if a third party performs the last act that intentionally causes a patient's death, euthanasia has taken place. For example, giving a patient a legal injection or putting a plastic bag over her head to suffocate her would be considered euthanasia. If the person who dies performs the last act, assisted suicide has taken place. Thus, it would be assisted suicide if a person swallows an overdose of drugs that has been provided by a doctor for the purpose of causing death. That is assisted suicide. It would also be assisted suicide if a patient pushes a switch to trigger a fatal injection after the doctor has inserted an intravenous needle into the patient's vein. Euthanasia is an intentional killing. It is an intentional killing by act or omission of a dependent human being for his or her alleged benefit. The key word here is intentional. It is an intentional killing. It is not an accidental killing. When someone practices euthanasia, he knows that his very act is going to be the cause of the death of the person who is going to die. So if death is not intended, it is not an act of euthanasia. So whenever there is euthanasia taking place, there was an intentional killing. That very act itself is the cause of the person's death. We need to carefully consider two terms, active and passive euthanasia. These terms have caused a great deal of confusion in the minds of the people. Active euthanasia refers to euthanasia in general. It refers to a case of causing death directly by a deliberately fatal act. So there was an intentional and very deliberate fatal act made. And that fatal act was the cause of the person's death. Passive euthanasia usually refers to a situation in which life-sustaining treatments are withheld or withdrawn from a terminally ill patient with the expectation that this omission will allow the person to die naturally. And I hope that you understand this one. That person naturally die. In other words, the act does not kill the person, but in fact, the primary cause of the person's death is the underlying illnesses or diseases. And probably we can find some more of those points later or sometime later. Second, there is something that we must know what euthanasia is not. There is no euthanasia unless the death is intentionally caused by what was done or not done. In other words, if the intentional act itself by a third party is the real cause of the death, then euthanasia took place, and it refers to active euthanasia. Someone has done something to cause a person's death. That is active euthanasia. Behind every act of euthanasia, there is a purpose, plan, intention, or design to kill a person who receives the very act. However, I must emphatically say that so-called passive euthanasia is not a form of euthanasia that we have been considering today. It must be differentiated from active euthanasia. Passive euthanasia, even though term euthanasia is being used there, it is completely different concept from active euthanasia. It is because of two reasons. Number one, there is no intention to kill anyone in this act. In passive euthanasia, intention is not to kill the people. B, it is not an act or omission that causes the patient's death, but the underlying diseases process. In other words, a patient will not suffer death because of any act considered to be passive euthanasia, but the very disease, illness, or physical afflictions he has suffered with would cause him to die. These acts include not commencing treatment that do not provide a benefit to the patient, withdrawing treatment that has been shown to be ineffective, too burdensome, and the giving of high doses of painkillers that may endanger life when they have been shown to be necessary in order to subdue the excruciating pain. So someone is very ill and there is an excruciating, unbearable pain and so on. So in order to control the pain, large doses of painkiller are given to the patient. As a result, it's a side effect. That person may die. However, there was no intention to kill the person, but it was a part of controlling the pain of the patient. And the patient suffers the natural death. And so that is being called as passive euthanasia, but there is no intention of killing the patient. And this is a common medical practice today. All these acts I explained are part of good medical practice endorsed by the law when they are properly carried out. And we do not want to leave the patient suffering unnecessarily. And so pain has to be controlled and pain management plan is being implemented. In the meanwhile, because of extreme pain, there is appropriate amount of painkiller is given, and it is only a side effect that the person may lose his life. It's a part of the treatment as well. A lot of people think that euthanasia or assisted suicide is needed so that patients won't be forced to remain alive by being hooked up to machines. But the law already permits patients or their surrogates to withhold or withdraw unwanted medical treatment, even if that increases the likelihood that the patient will die. Thus, no one needs to be hooked up to machines against their will. Neither the law nor medical ethics requires that everything be done to keep a person alive. Insistence against the patient's wishes that death be postponed by every means available is contrary to the law and practice. It is also cruel and inhumane. Sometimes when nature takes over our body, there has to be a time when we have to let nature take its own course over the bodies. That's the way that we come and we go. There comes a time when continued attempts to cure are not compassionate, wise, or medically sound. That's when hospice care can be of great help. Here I'm talking about hospice. It is because a lot of people who are talking about euthanasia is talking about the pain of the patients and so on. But I must be very honest with you. The primary reason that people are talking about euthanasia is economical and financial. Because if someone has to be hooked up to the machine endlessly and so on, NHS bill will go up, and the government funding is being cut down, you know, these days, and just even government tax money will not be able to cover all those expenses. But in a sense, England is a blessed country because there is a social medicine is being practiced, but in a lot of countries, there are no social medicine like England. And so if someone is sick, if a parent is endlessly sick and so on, the hospital bills cannot be borne by their loved ones and so on. And so as a result, euthanasia becomes an option for economic and financial reasons, which is very sad. However, what we have to think about is that there is an alternative, which is hospice ministry and hospice services. And by controlling individuals' pain level and so on, hospice service will provide an alternative service for those people who are terminally ill and very sick. Once after euthanasia is going to be legalized, what I can see is that it will be practiced. In the meanwhile, hospice service will be cut down, at least. So everything is being calculated in relation to money and matters. That is the time. All euthanasia advocates are talking about human compassion and humane treatments of terminally ill people. However, we should be able to think about alternative services for those people who are suffering a great deal. When all efforts, medical assistance, cannot help the terminally ill people, then there should be a practice or there should be provisions for them to spend their remaining time comfortably. And that's why hospice service is important. Then all interventions should be directed to alleviating pain and other symptoms, as well as to the provision of emotional and spiritual support of both the patient and patient's loved ones. Here we are talking about a palliative care or necessity of it. Before we talk about any idea of euthanasia or assisted suicide, we should be able to talk about palliative care and hospice ministry and necessity of it. Quite often, people talk about the necessity of euthanasia on the financial ground, as I mentioned. Of course, people are talking about compassion toward the terminally ill patients. All of them have their own strength in their discussion. However, as soon as people choose to kill people under its euphemistic name, euthanasia or mercy killing, there will be funding cuts for hospice services and palliative care. Human lives will be dealt with only in terms of pragmatist point of view. The withholding of medical therapy is reasonable when the treatment is disproportionately burdensome. So here is a terminally ill person and medical assistance is given, but eventually because this patient body is so weak and so feeble, further medical treatment actually gives him more suffering rather than any alleviation or relief from pain and suffering. In such a case, obviously, it is not necessary to continue that sort of burdensome medical treatment. Instead, there has to be a time when the nature takes him over. In other words, we are not ethically bound to use unwanted, non-beneficial therapies that serve to only prolong a person's dying. In fact, not doing so shows profound respect for the boundaries of natural life. We cannot live forever, and there has to be a time of our death unless Jesus comes again before we experience the physical death. The patient's body is going to take its course of nature without machine's help, and we have to let the nature takes over the body. Thus, the church makes a precise differentiation between euthanasia and the decision not to use extraordinary means to maintain life in those instances when a person is hopelessly ill. In such case, our care must be given to alleviate the pain the patients suffer with. The sole form of a good death from the church's point of view is the peaceful acceptance of the end of earthly life, enriched by faith and trusting God and in the hope of the resurrection in Christ Jesus. It is important to understand that euthanasia cannot be equated with the current understanding of palliative care. Palliative care is the active relief of suffering in a terminally ill individual. And although there are occasions when treatment may shorten life, this is not intended or anticipated result. It is simply a side effect or complications of the therapy, and it is therefore ethically permissible. Generally, adequate doses of narcotics to relieve pain do not shorten life. It is important for us to recognize this distinction between euthanasia and active euthanasia and passive euthanasia. In fact, I personally oppose to use the term passive euthanasia because it sounds awful. And it gives us wrong impressions as if it is okay to practice euthanasia. But I cannot find any other alternative term at the moment, but want to make it differentiated from active euthanasia. It is not a form of euthanasia. So if you look at humanist websites or euthanasia advocates websites and so on, they try to bring passive euthanasia very, very directly into the category of euthanasia, so that they are saying, you see, it is a good practice, medical practice, therefore a general euthanasia must be allowed, and so on. They are trying to blur the distinction between active and passive euthanasia, and we should never allow that blurry distinction, identification. Quite often, I had to see my church families dying. And at the last stage of their living, some of them had excruciating pain and suffering. And in order to control their unbearable pain, large doses of painkillers had to be given to relieve them from further pain. And obviously it is not to kill them. There is no such an intention or a purpose. But it is a part of a help to relieve them from their pain. But its side effects had shortened their lives. Again, the direct cause of their death was not that painkillers, but in fact the direct cause of their death was the underlying disease and illnesses. Giving them painkillers was not a cause of their deaths, but their diseases. Painkillers were served to reduce their pain, and it was a proper medical treatment. Therefore, there is a difference between active and passive euthanasia. Active euthanasia, from biblical point of view, is the same as homicide. It's a premeditated murder. Passive euthanasia is a deceptive term. If any act is done or not done to cure a person, it is euthanasia. We also recognize that a certain act may be done or not done in order to relieve the pain of suffering patients. In the meanwhile, the treated patients may die. However, in such cases, it is not the act but the diseases that cause their deaths. So that is a huge difference between active euthanasia and regular medical practice, which has been known as passive euthanasia. Well, I will continue on this topic a few weeks later after I come back from Africa. And I hope that we recognize the value of life, and we know that active euthanasia is a premeditated homicide. Let us look to the Lord in prayer.